Hello and welcome to Sound Body, a weekly program of information on health topics and ideas that can help you live life to its fullest. I'm Louise Craig. Every morning I have a mug, well, it's kind of closer to a gallon of tea, and try to figure out what to have for breakfast. If there's time, I like to have a boiled egg with a piece of multigrain toast, buttered, and with just a little bit of honey. Other mornings, though, the choice is between yogurt with some fruit or cereal with fruit. Now, I used to be disciplined enough to eat plain yogurt with fruit and just a tiny little drop of vanilla extract, but I am not that disciplined anymore. And the price of vanilla has gone through the roof since hurricanes wiped out the Madagascar vanilla plants. So I eat the sugary, yummy kind of yogurt or cereal. And my cereal isn't plain Cheerios, which apparently have very little sugar. So it turns out I struggle to lessen the amount of sugar in my life, too. Today we will read about how the sugar industry managed to keep us from understanding the health risks associated with eating too much sugar, and we'll read about how to stop eating sugar or at least as much sugar. We're going to start with the New York Times, written by Anna Had O'Connor on November 21st, 2017, and it's titled Sugar Industry Long Downplayed Potential Harms. The sugar industry funded animal research in the 1960s that looked into the effects of sugar consumption on cardiovascular health, and then buried the data when it suggested that sugar could be harmful, according to newly released historical documents. The internal industry documents were uncovered by researchers at the University of California, San Francisco, and described in a new report in the journal PLOS Biology on Tuesday. The report's authors say it builds on evidence that the sugar industry has long tried to mislead the public and protect its economic interests by suppressing worrisome research, a tactic used by the tobacco industry. The documents show that in 1968, a trade group called the Sugar Research Foundation, known today as the Sugar Association, funded a research project on animals to shed light on the connection between sugar and heart health. But when the research pointed to a mechanism by which sugar might promote not only heart disease, but also bladder cancer, the industry group ended the study and never published the results. The sugar industry has long insisted that sugar has no unique role in promoting obesity, diabetes, or heart disease, though numerous studies by independent researchers have concluded otherwise. Stanton Glantz, a professor of medicine at UCSF and an author of the new report, said that even though the newly discovered documents are 50 years old, they are important because they point to a decades-long strategy to downplay the potential health effects of sugar consumption. This is continuing to build the case that the sugar industry has a long history of manipulating science, Dr. Glantz said. In a statement, the Sugar Association disputed the new report, calling it a collection of speculations and assumptions about events that happened nearly five decades ago, conducted by a group of researchers and funded by individuals and organizations that are known critics of the sugar industry. The current research was funded mainly by the National Institutes of Health and the Laura and John Arnold Foundation, a private foundation that has given money to support taxes on sugary beverages. The statement said that sugar consumed in moderation is part of a balanced lifestyle, and it emphasized that the Sugar Association remained committed to supporting research to further understand the role sugar plays in consumers' evolving eating habits. The documents described in the new report are part of a cache of internal sugar industry communications that Kristen E. Kearns, an assistant professor at the UCSF School of Dentistry, discovered in recent years at library archives at several universities. Last year, an article in the New York Times highlighted some of the previous documents that Dr. Kearns had uncovered, which showed that the sugar industry launched a campaign in the 1960s to counter negative attitudes toward sugar, in part by funding sugar research that could produce favorable results. The campaign was orchestrated by John Hixon, a top executive at the Sugar Association, who later joined the tobacco industry. As part of the sugar industry campaign, Mr. Hixon secretly paid two influential Harvard scientists to publish a major review paper in 1967 that minimized the link between sugar and heart health and shifted blame to saturated fat. The new report on Tuesday revealed additional internal sugar industry documents from that era. They showed that Mr. Hixon was worried at the time about emerging studies indicating that calories from sugar were more detrimental to heart health than calories from starchy carbohydrates like grains, beans, and potatoes. Mr. Hixon suspected this might be because microbes that reside in the gut, known collectively as the microbiota, metabolized sugar and starches differently. In 1968, the sugar organization started what it called Project 259. The group recruited a researcher at the University of Birmingham in England, W.F.R. Pover, and paid him the equivalent of $187,000 in today's dollars to conduct a laboratory study on animals. The goal of the experiment was to test whether germ-free rats and guinea pigs that lacked gut bacteria would respond differently to sugar and starches than normal animals. The initial results, described in a 1969 internal industry report as of particular interest, raised a concern. The rats fed sucrose, the main component of cane sugar, had produced high levels of an enzyme called beta-glucuronidase, which three other studies published around that time had associated with hardened arteries and bladder cancer. This is one of the first demonstrations of a biological difference between sucrose and starch-fed rats, the internal industry report stated. The documents show that Dr. Pover found something else highly significant. The initial phase of the research appeared to confirm that sugar's adverse effects on cholesterol and triglycerides were a result of it being metabolized and fermented by gut bacteria. Dr. Pover said at the time that he was nearing completion of Project 259, but needed an extension to prove conclusively that the effects he was seeing were mediated by the microbiota. But despite having granted him a previous extension, the Sugar Association decided to pull the plug on Project 259 and eliminate its funding. In an internal report in 1970, Mr. Hixon updated fellow sugar executives on studies that could elicit useful and significant information for the industry, and described the value of Project 259 as nil. The industry report suggested that Dr. Pover was disappointed, noting that he expressed hopes of obtaining continuing support from other sources. He never succeeded. The research was never published, and it is not entirely clear why. Both Dr. Pover and Mr. Hixon are no longer alive. A Sugar Association spokeswoman said that the group reviewed its research archives and determined that Dr. Pover's study ended because it was delayed, over budget, and had overlapped with an organizational restructuring. There were plans to continue the study with funding from the British Nutrition Foundation, the statement said, but for reasons unbeknown to us, this did not occur. But Marion Nestle, a professor of nutrition, food studies, and public health at New York University, said the internal industry documents were striking because they provide rare evidence that the food industry suppressed research it did not like, a practice that has been documented among tobacco companies, drug companies, and other industries. From what this paper says, the sugar industry was not interested in answering open-ended questions about whether sugar might be harmful to rats or, given preliminary suggestions of possible harm, doing further studies to find out one way or the other, she said. Instead, it stopped the research when the results looked unfavorable. In general, research on rats and other lab animals is not considered as persuasive as data from human studies. But in the 1960s, Dr. Kearns said, animal data held much more weight. A federal law at the time banned food additives that had been shown to induce cancer in animals, and in 1969, for example, the Food and Drug Administration banned cyclamate, a very popular artificial sweetener, after research showed that it caused bladder cancer in rats. At the time, the Sugar Association considered cyclamate a threat to its market share, and it had not only lobbied the FDA to remove it, but also funded some of the research linking it to health problems. Mr. Hixon left the sugar industry in the early 1970s to work for the Cigar Research Council, a tobacco industry organization. In 1972, an internal tobacco industry memo on Mr. Hixon noted that he had a reputation for manipulating science to achieve his goals. The confidential tobacco memo described Mr. Hixon as a supreme scientific politician who had been successful in condemning cyclamates on behalf of the Sugar Research Council on somewhat shaky evidence. Also from the New York Times, our next article was written by David Leonhardt, and it is titled, How to Stop Eating Sugar. If you're like most Americans, you eat more sugar than is good for you, but it's entirely possible to eat less sugar without sacrificing much, if any, of the pleasures of eating. Surprising as it may sound, many people who have cut back on sugar say they find their new eating habits more pleasurable than their old ones. This guide will walk you through why sugar matters, how you can make smart food choices to reduce sugar consumption, and how you can keep your life sweet even without so many sweets. Here's why you eat more sugar than you realize and why it's a problem. The first thing to know, added sugars of one kind or another are almost everywhere in the modern diet. They're in sandwich bread, chicken stock, pickles, salad dressing, crackers, yogurt, and cereal, as well as in the obvious foods and drinks like soda and desserts. The biggest problem with added sweeteners is that they make it easy to overeat. They're tasty and highly caloric, but they often don't make you feel full. Instead, they can trick you into wanting even more food. Because we're surrounded by added sweeteners in our kitchens and restaurants, at schools and offices, most of us will eat too much of them unless we consciously set out to do otherwise. How did we get here? It's not an accident. The sugar industry has conducted an aggressive, decades-long campaign to blame the obesity epidemic on fats, not sugars. Fats, after all, seem as if they should cause obesity. Thanks partly to that campaign, sugar consumption soared in the United States, even as people were trying to lose weight. But research increasingly indicates that an overabundance of simple carbohydrates, and sugar in particular, is the number one problem in modern diets. Sugar is the driving force behind the diabetes and obesity epidemics. Fortunately, more people are realizing the harms of sugar and cutting back. Health experts recommend that you focus on reducing added sweeteners, like granulated sugar, high fructose corn syrup, honey, maple syrup, stevia, and molasses. You don't need to worry so much about the sugars that are a natural part of fruit, vegetables, and dairy products. Most people don't overeat naturally occurring sugars, as Marion Nestle of New York University says. The fiber, vitamins, and minerals that surround them fill you up. A typical adult should not eat more than 50 grams, or about 12 teaspoons, of added sugars per day, and closer to 25 is healthier. The average American would need to reduce added sweetener consumption by about 40% to get down to even the 50-gram threshold. Here's how you can do it without spending more money on food than you already do. The game plan. Changing your diet is hard. If your strategy involves thinking about sugar all the time, whenever you're shopping or eating, you'll likely fail. You'll also be miserable in the process. It's much more effective to come up with a few simple rules and habits that then become second nature. One strategy to consider, eliminate all added sugars for 1 month and then add back only the ones you miss. It's easier than it sounds. Above all, most people's goal should be to find a few simple, lasting ways to cut back on sugar. Once you're done reading this guide, we suggest you choose two or three of our ideas and try them for a few weeks. First thing in the morning. Remember, breakfast shouldn't taste like dessert. Breakfast is the most dangerous meal of the day for sugar. Many breakfast foods that sound as if they're healthy are in fact laden with sugar. In Chobani's strawberry yogurt, for example, the second ingredient ahead of strawberries is evaporated cane sugar. And many brands of granola have more sugar per serving than Fruit Loops or Cocoa Puffs. In the United States, as the science writer Gary Taubes says, breakfasts have become lower-fat versions of dessert. There are two main strategies to ensure that breakfast doesn't become a morning dessert. The first is for people who can't imagine moving away from a grain-based breakfast like cereal or toast. If you fall into this category, you have to be quite careful because processed grains are often packed with sugar. A few grain-based breakfasts with no or very low sugar. Cheerios, they're quite low in sugar. Plain oatmeal, flavor it with fresh fruit, and if necessary, a small sprinkling of brown sugar. Bread. A few breads have no sugar, like Ezekiel 4 to 9 whole grain. A longer list of brands have only 1 gram or less per slice, including Sara Lee whole wheat and Nature's Own whole wheat. Authentic Middle Eastern breads like pita and lavash are particularly good options, and a growing number of supermarkets sell them. Homemade granola. You can also make your own granola and play around with the sugar amounts. But there is also a more creative alternative. Move away from grain-based breakfasts. If you do that, as I have recently after decades of eating cereal, avoiding added sugar is easy. My new breakfast routine actually feels more indulgent than my old one. Most days, I eat 3 or 4 of the following: scrambled or fried eggs, fruit, plain yogurt, a small piece of toast, a few nuts, a small portion of well-spiced vegetables like spinach, carrots, and sweet potatoes. Veggies for breakfast? I realize the part about vegetables may sound weird. Maybe morning veggies isn't for you, but maybe you'll be surprised to discover they are, as I was. Remember, in much of the world, including large parts of Asia, breakfast is a savory meal, not a sweet one, just as lunch and dinner are. Vegetables aren't a weird thing to eat for breakfast in China or India. A final tip, keep your juice portions small. Real juice doesn't have added sweeteners, but fruit juice is one source of natural sugars that can be dangerous because of how efficiently it delivers those sugars. You're not eating the stomach-filling fiber of an orange when you drink a glass of orange juice. Keep your juice portions to no more than 6 ounces and have only one per day. From the bottle and can. Beverages are one of the biggest sources of added sugars in our diets. Eliminate soda from your regular diet. Just get rid of it. If you must, drink diet soda. Ideally, though, you should get rid of diet soda too. That may sound extreme, but sweetened beverages are by far the biggest source of added sugar in the American diet, 47% according to the federal government. Soda, along with sweetened sports drinks, energy drinks, and iced teas, is essentially flavored, liquefied sugar that pumps calories into your body without filling you up. Among all foods and beverages, says Kelly Brownell, an obesity expert and dean of the Sanford School of Public Policy at Duke, the science is most robust and most convincing on the link between soft drinks and negative health outcomes. Get this, a single 16-ounce bottle of Coke has 52 grams of sugar. That's more added sugar than most adults should consume in an entire day. As for diet soda, researchers aren't yet sure whether they're damaging or harmless. Some scientists think diet soda is perfectly fine. Others, like the Yale cardiologist Dr. Harlan Krumholtz, think it may be damaging. Dr. Krumholtz recently announced that after years of pounding diet sodas, he was giving them up. There is reason to believe, he wrote, that the artificial sweeteners they contain lead to weight gain and metabolic abnormalities. The soda alternative. Many people who think they're addicted to soda are attracted to either the caffeine or the carbonation in the drink. You can get caffeine from coffee and tea, lightly sweetened or unsweetened, and you can get carbonation from seltzer, flavored or otherwise. For many people, the shift to seltzer, club soda, or sparkling water is life-changing. It turns hydration into a small treat that's still calorie-free. Buy yourself a seltzer maker, as I have, and gorge on the stuff at home, while saving money. Or buy fizzy water in cans or bottles. Sales of carbonated water have more than doubled since 2010, with the brand La Croix now offering more than 20 different flavors, all without added sugar. If they're not sweet enough for you, you can also add a dash of juice to plain seltzer. But many people find that they lose their taste for soda after giving it up. And many Americans are giving it up. Since the late 1990s, sales of full-calorie soda have fallen more than 25%. Check your pantry. Check the labels of your pantry staples for some easy places to cut the sugar. Food makers sneak sugar into more foods than you may realize. It's in many brands of chicken stock, soup, salami, smoked salmon, tortillas, and crackers. And most of these foods do not need sweeteners to taste good. If you take a little time to look at labels at the grocery store or online, you can quickly learn which staples have sugar and which don't. Here's a sampling of some quick switches you could make. Crackers. With added sugar, Wheat Thins and Ritz. Without sugar, Triscuits and Saltines. Tortillas. With added sugar, Mission. And without sugar, Guerrero. Chicken broth. With added sugar, Swanson and College Inn. And without sugar, Pacific. Tip, if you live near a Trader Joe's, it provides a lot of good, affordable options. Many of its staples have little or no added sweeteners, including some of its house brand sandwich breads, tortillas, and bacon. Try it. When you go to the supermarket, compare various brands and choose one with little added sugar. Do this once, and then it's easy to make the no-sugar items your default. You no longer have to spend energy thinking about it. Start with a product's nutrition facts table. Some products now include a helpful line listing the amount of added sugars in addition to the standard sugars line, which includes naturally occurring sugars. The Trump administration has made the added sugars line voluntary, however, so you may also need to look at the full ingredient list next to the nutrition facts table to figure out whether a food has an added sweetener. Snacks. Snacks can all too easily turn into yet another dessert. Many granola bars and power bars are packed with added sugars. The same goes for canned and dried fruits. And don't kid yourself about those flavored Starbucks drinks. They're more like a milkshake than a cup of coffee. What are better alternatives for snacking? Have some nuts or popcorn or fresh fruit or canned fruit that doesn't come soaked in thick syrup. Several companies have also realized that more people are trying to reduce their sugar intake and have begun offering snack bars without added sweeteners. These options include Lara bars and RX bars. And we have your Starbucks drink may have 25 spoons of sugar in it. Written by Ivana Kotasova for CNN Money, and this was posted on February 17th, 2016. Warning, you might want to put that caramel latte down before reading this. Flavored drinks served by the likes of Starbucks can contain up to 25 teaspoons of sugar per serving, according to a new report by a British campaign group, Action on Sugar. That's three times the amount of sugar in one can of Coke and more than three times the maximum adult daily intake recommended by the American Heart Association. The report said that 98% of hot-flavored drinks sold at major coffee chains in the UK have excessive levels of sugars per serving, with 35% containing 9 or more teaspoons of sugar, the same amount as a can of Coca-Cola. The research focused on drinks sold in the UK, but nutritional information published on the company's website show that sugar levels are similar in the US and elsewhere. Action on Sugar describes itself as a group of specialists concerned with sugar and its effects on health. Its advisors and staff include doctors, nutritionists, and public health specialists. It analyzed 131 hot drinks, including flavored lattes, chai teas, mocha coffees, and mulled fruit drinks. The survey touched on 9 big coffee shops and food chains in Britain, including Starbucks, Costa, and Pret a Manger. The group also campaigns against hidden sugars in everyday food, organizes Sugar Awareness Week, and advises people on how to eat less sugar. The report said Starbucks' hot mulled fruit grape with chai, orange, and cinnamon was the worst offender, with 25 teaspoons of sugar. 2 other popular Starbucks choices, vanilla latte and caramel macchiato, contain more than 8 teaspoons of sugar each, according to the company's U.S. website. Starbucks said it has committed to reduce added sugar in its indulgent drinks by 25% by the end of 2020. We also offer a wide variety of lighter options, sugar-free syrups, and sugar-free natural sweetener, and we display all nutritional information in-store and online, a Starbucks spokesperson said. A medium Dunkin' Donuts vanilla chai has over 11 teaspoons of sugar, while a hot macchiato includes 7 teaspoons. KFC's mocha contains 15 teaspoons of sugar. A large mocha at McDonald's has 11 teaspoons, and a chai latte Massimo at the British chain Costa Coffee includes 20 teaspoons. These hot flavored drinks should be an occasional treat, not an everyday drink. They are laden with an unbelievable amount of sugar and calories and are often accompanied by a high sugar and fat snack, said Cawthor Hashem, a researcher for Action on Sugar. Health campaigns against excessive sugar contents has been gaining momentum in recent years. The World Health Organization has recently suggested cutting the recommended sugar intake for adults in half, to about 25 grams, around 6 teaspoons of sugar, for a normal weight adult per day. And that's it. Thank you for tuning in to SoundBody. Stay well and come back next week, please, for more healthy living ideas. This has been SoundBody, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. I'm Louise Craig, and I hope you'll join me again next week for more health updates and information for healthy living. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show at our website, wxxi.org.